Steve, thanks so much. Hi, guys. It's us. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Welcome to the show. Happy Election Day, Wendy.
I'm 18. Is that when you can vote?
Yeah,
is
you are now allowed. This will be your first legal time. You've voted many times in the past illegally, but now that you've passed 18, it's legal.
Do you remember, though, the first time you voted? Because it was pretty doggone exciting.
Yes.
And getting your voter registration card, just another thing to put in your wallet that proved you were an adult.
Yep. It's very exciting. There's a cast member here at WGN Radio who voted today and got all dressed up to vote.
Really?
Yes.
One of our head engineers, Jim Holland, was very dressed up today.
Dressed to the nines.
And I said, Jim, you look great. And he said, I voted. And I jokingly said, is that your Sunday go to vote and clothes?
Tuesday go to vote and clothes.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah. And he said, yes, I got dressed up to vote. And more people should do that.
It's a sacred duty.
Yes.
It's pretty exciting.
So true. Yeah,
I wish I could vote. I feel left out because I'm a suburbanite.
Well, you can. I mean, there are a lot of suburban elections today, too. You have nothing in your town?
I don't think so. Oh, yes, we do.
Well, then you can vote.
You have to vote. Get dressed up and vote, Wendy.
Come on. You just said you wish you could vote. Now you
can
vote.
I meant for the mayor. The mayor's the big thing. Come on.
We have a big vote to save our pool.
I voted for that, Mary.
I'm very excited.
I was up at 5 a.m. voting for that.
When
today.
I heard that the Vandeveld pool was at risk, I'm like, what can I do?
This has got to stop, we said. Where do we vote for this?
Well, right. As soon as I get off for Lufkin Pool.
Wait,
why do they want to close it?
Yeah, why?
It's all a money thing. We have two pools in our town, and they're both in need of a lot of repairs. It's a lot of money.
So
whenever I hear Mary Vandeveld is from a two-pool town, I never know what that means, and now
Rich.
I do, finally. Yeah.
Richie Rich.
Rich.
It's not. It's but our
is
pool
one
is
pool
better.
Far superior to the other one?
Well, I think so. But one's on the north side, one's on the south side. Mm-hmm.
Are they both public pools?
Yes. Yes, they're both.
Wow, you have two to choose from?
Well, this one is super old. It's been there forever. I mean, I used to go when I was a little kid. It's a very old pool, and it just needs a lot of work. And so a lot of the local families are trying to save it. I mean, my little nieces went, you know, door to door the other day. My three little cute nieces.
To sign a petition or something?
Get sympathy before you'd put chlorine in your eyes. Or, look, I just got out of the public pool.
Why is all the press coverage on Preckwinkle and Lightfoot when this is going on?
The Villa Park pool, come on.
This is insane.
Yes,
this
big
is crazy.
Deal.
So Villa Park could go dry.
Just on the south side.
Technically, yes. Technically,
not the
north
side.
Can I tell you what my favorite moment of yesterday's show was?
Yes.
We had on a mentalist, a predictor of people's minds.
Is this an off-the-air moment?
Oh, what was the name of that mentalist on TV? I love that guy. He's so cute.
The one on television, Mary, or the one that we had on?
Well, no, the mentalist on TV. Not the one you are. I don't know. Was he cute?
I don't know what mentalist on TV.
Mark Toland was the one that we had in the studio.
He was amazing.
There was a show with a guy named Simon something who was a mentalist.
That was it.
Is that the one? Yeah.
Yes.
All right. So he did a trick. Mark Toland did a trick to read our minds where you wrote something on a piece of paper and I wrote something on a piece of paper. And he would have to somehow, through mental telepathy, figure out what we wrote on the paper. And as he was doing the trick, Wendy, I was watching you. And you had the wonderment
of a little kid.
Of a small, yeah.
And then you busted it during the commercial break, and Bertrand was there for it. And I swore at you.
I explained to you how it was done, but he himself said,
yes.
I don't have any true mental abilities. I'm a showman.
I'm here to lie to you.
Right. I'm here to lie to you. He goes, once we get this pool thing figured out where Mary Vandeveld lives, all my attention will be spent on predicting what you people have written on paper, you and I. And he did get yours right away, but as he did it, I was watching you, and I've never seen anyone so enthralled with anything.
I really
was. It
was
a thing of wonder.
That was so exciting for me.
I shouldn't have told you how it was done,
No,
right?
I'm glad you did.
Yeah? All right.
But you cannot enjoy life if you're constantly thinking of how something's done. You got to sometimes give into it. You're the one who had a problem with one of the space movies.
Yes.
Because you said that couldn't happen.
Yes.
And then we talked to our hot scientist, Lucianne Walkowitz,
right,
and said that could happen. And you ruined the movie for yourself.
It was too late because I already, when I was, that was the movie with Matt Damon where he
I can't
goes
think of the
to
name
Mars,
of it.
Right?
Lived on Mars. I think it was called
Martian.
Mars. Martian, yeah.
Wasn't it the Astro? Oh, it was Martian.
The Martian.
Yeah. Oh, Simon Baker was the mentalist.
Was he in The Martian?
Yes. No.
He was, but his part was cut.
And I didn't like the movie The Martian because I went thinking it was that guy Gazoo from the Flintstones. And then when he wasn't in it, I asked for my money back. I was furious. All right. We'll discuss this more further because I will tell you a time where a mentalist totally impressed me, did something that I still can't figure out.
So really?
Yeah. We'll get to that later in the show. Yeah. It's possible.
Wow, you were bamboozled.
I was bamboozled. I'll admit it.
One time only.
All right, we will talk to Paul Lisnik about today's election in just a minute. Stick around for that. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
There's a guy that we see on WGN-TV and CLTV, and he is a political analyst, and he is a friend of ours, and he's Paul Lisnik. How are you, Paul?
I'm great, and it's always good to be with you guys. Good morning.
Thanks, Paul. Are you anticipating low turnout tonight?
Well, I am. You know, I went and voted myself this morning, and it was me and the election judges in the room, which is nothing but an anecdotal comment. But, you know, listen, it was Toni Preckwinkle herself during one of the debates who anticipated a low turnout. It's really astounding, maybe because we all are interested in politics and follow it so much. It's just hard to believe why somebody wouldn't take the 5 minutes it takes to just run over and cast your vote.
If it is a low turnout, Paul, does that benefit Toni Preckwinkle more than it does Lori Lightfoot?
Well, I think it does, because Preckwinkle is the organization, right? I don't use the word machine anymore, but she certainly is the Democratic organization with the Democratic Party behind her, Cook County, with all the traditional folks, Jesse White and Danny Davis and all these folks who are behind her, and Bobby Rush. And so on election days, the people that, you know, get out to those polls typically are those, you know, loyal, stalwart Democrats will make their way, certainly those who are you know, part of the unions and all of that. But, you know, listen, it's also a new day in this city. Nobody would have ever guessed that Lori Lightfoot, who's never held office before, you know, would basically represent a mood of change, a mood of we're done with the way things were. So if her voters wake up and get to the polls, then we're liable to see a decisive victory in her favor, which is what the polls say. But that being said, you can never count out the traditional candidate, which to me is Preckwinkle.
Okay, and I know that a lot of people put off voting in the original election because there were too many people to choose from. I heard a lot of people say that, oh, I'll wait and see what happens, and then I'll vote in the runoff. So would you expect the runoff voting to be higher than what we had in the original election a few weeks ago?
Well, Wendy, I do agree with the people's view is, oh, I've got 14 candidates. What am I going to do? I'll just take it down to the final two. It's a good argument. I just think that there's, you know, it is a beautiful day out there today, I got to tell you, so we're not dealing with snow and rain or anything else to keep people away from the polls. But if I were going to guess, I imagine tonight when we're on WGN talking about this, I think we're going to see a relatively low turnout consistent with what we saw in February.
So
it may not be record lows.
Paul, it's Bertrand. And so, right, we were making kind of excuses for the low turnout in the February voting. Here we are in the general, if you will, or the runoff vote. If the numbers aren't any bigger, it just kind of shows that the voters don't care that much.
Steve, that might be it. I mean, it literally might be that people, or they think their vote doesn't matter. I don't know that you can say people don't care. They care about who runs their city. But, you know, I mean, look, you have a lot of young people who get motivated by certain candidates, in this case, Lori Lightfoot, but it's just not enough for them to take the time out of their day to go do it. You know, maybe one day when we can vote online, and I'm serious about that, when we just find ways for people to vote on their phones and do other things, we'll see voting rates go up. I just think we're in an environment where a lot of people just don't feel it and don't want to take the time. It's unfortunate.
Paul, how will things be different if Lori Lightfoot wins, and how will things be different if Toni Preckwinkle wins from what we're accustomed to?
I think under a Lightfoot administration, first of all, you've had Lori say very strongly that she wants to put a stake through aldermanic prerogative. But she can't do that without the permission of the aldermen. I don't know very many aldermen, except maybe some new ones who might make their way on, who would agree with giving up that power to make zoning decisions and signage decisions and licensing decisions. So the question for me under a Lightfoot administration is, does she come in, try to make the kind of change she talked about, realize that it ain't happening with a city council that's not going to be open to it, and do we return to what was the original design of the city, but we haven't had that way in decades and decades, which is a strong city council and a weak mayor. That's the design. But ever since the days of Richard Daley, with some few exceptions in between, certainly Richard M. Daley and Mayor Rahm Emanuel, you know, we've seen strong mayors who have a tight grip on their city council. I think that would change under Lightfoot. Under Preckwinkle, I think she would come in and command a power base fairly quickly. Like her predecessors in that role, I think we would see a very strong mayor.
Are people still thinking about that stupid soda tax that came up? Because that, to me, was irritating, and a lot of people were against Tony Preckwinkle for that. Is that a factor at all?
You know, there are people who I think that's in their mind, although, look, I've interviewed Tony many, many times, and we've talked about it, and I just, you know, in fairness to her, what she said was she didn't want to do the soda tax. That wasn't what she was after, but revenue was needed. She had not one vote, she would tell you, among her commissioners for any other kind of increase. The only thing that would squeak through was the soda tax, so that's why she did it. She also realizes, after a period of months when it was a total disaster, that it got repealed. So, you know, and of course, the result of that was she had to, a lot of people lost their jobs, budget cuts were made, and, you know, she said, that's what I said was going to have to happen. I mean, the one plus for a Preckwinkle today, who I think is really in a very, very tough fight, is she has submitted balanced budgets, sometimes at great cost to jobs and other things, for the last 9 years as she's been chair of the Cook County Board. The other thing is, if Lightfoot wins, then Tony Preckwinkle continues as the chair of the Cook County Board, and then our hope is that they will work together. You know, one of the things Preckwinkle did, and we hit her with this really in the last debate, there is a door that separates the city and county sides of City Hall. And she and Rahm, of course, were no fast friends, although they did some work together and tried some things. But she had that door ordered closed. To me, a symbolic move to basically just say, this city, this county, we're not working together. She doesn't go there when you talk to her about it, but they have pledged to work together no matter who wins. Wednesday morning, they're going to have a prayer breakfast with Reverend Jesse Jackson Sr. We'll see.
To my knowledge, Paul, Mayor Emanuel hasn't endorsed either of these women to be the mayor. What's behind that?
I don't think the mayor is a fan of either one of these folks, to be honest with you. We know that Lori Lightfoot said she wasn't going to run against him, and then she did. Tony Preckwinkle, I've just talked about the fact that they've always had not the best relationship. Again, not that they couldn't work together when they had to, but it wasn't a great relationship. So, you know, I think Mayor Emanuel probably sees himself as, look, I'm out. Good luck to the next mayor. Neither one of these women is you know, who was my choice for this. Who would have been his choice? I don't know. I think he would have been satisfied maybe with a Bill Daley, although I think there's some, you know, if you think about it, Rahm really did inherit a financial mess from Richard M. Daley, but to his credit, I don't ever remember him basically putting the blame on Richard Daley. I never remember him saying, Daley handed me this mess or whatever. He took the bulls by the horn of the problem he had to deal with, and he forged ahead, much to the chagrin of some people, as we saw a lot of new taxes.
Paul, on a much lighter note, there's a television show that's on with Lisa Welchel from The Facts of Life, and I saw a preview for it, and I could swear you're a guest on that show.
I am actually the first episode.
Are you?
It's called Collector's Call, and you know, I do a lot of I have a lot of presidential stuff and Broadway stuff and theater memorabilia,
yeah.
And so yeah, Collector's, it's a new. I was actually the 11th episode they filmed, but for whatever reason, they seem to enjoy it so much that mine is the premiere episode.
Wow.
My goofy brother is my guest in the show.
is he credited as that, my goofy brother?
Well, I don't know what they're going to call him, but I'm sure they had to do a lot of editing with by the time he was done. He was like a Me Too movement waiting to happen. But it was great fun to do. We'll show off some of the things in my collection. They really do make you an offer at the end. So the reaction you'll see from me is real, because I did not know what they were going to offer me for one of my collectibles, and I really had to mull it over and decide what to do. It's kind of like a Bravo feel to this show.
When can we see this?
And where?
It premieres Sunday night. I'll be going to a launch party during the day, but it premieres Sunday night, I think at 9 o'clock, on MeTV. So, you know, it's kind of fun for me to sort of hit, like, last Friday, I hosted the Adopt-A-Pet segment on the Midday News. I kind of like people getting
that.
To see a different side of me rather than just, you know, yes, there is the political side. I know that's what my job is. That's what I do. But, you know, there are some other passions in life that we enjoy.
That's why your podcast Behind the Curtain is so enjoyable.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate that. And that today, in fact, I'm going to have Taylor Williamson on the podcast from America's Got Talent. Remember him?
Yeah.
A few years ago, he came in second, the cast of some local shows. And by the way, in that Adopt-A-Pet segment, Wendy, I worked your sister's name into it.
I know. My sister and Paul worked together many years ago.
Your sister, Paul's brother. This is weird.
It's a whole family affair.
Very strange. Paul, we'll be watching, and thanks for joining us today with your mayoral coverage. We really appreciate it.
Help me decide.
Prediction?
Tie your bow tie tonight. What do you want?
You got to go bow tie.
Bolo.
It's for you.
Bolo.
Yeah, go
bolo. I don't have a bolo. I don't have a bolo.
Thank God.
You have a shoelace. You have a shoelace. You got a bolo.
I might pick one up.
All right.
All right, bow tie and your prediction.
Okay. Well, I mean, I hate doing that because I want people to vote.
Yeah,
but
I
the
agree.
Polls are pretty clear about what's likely to happen. And by the way, there's two races. There's a treasurer's race as well. People have to decide between Amaya Pawar and Melissa Conyers Irvin. So, you know, there is that treasurer's race to vote for, too. Right now, Irvin seems to be holding on, but you can't count out Amaya Pawar at all.
All right. Paul, we appreciate it.
Thank
have
you,
a
guys.
Great rest of the week. Paul Lisnick, everybody.
I love
from
him.
Politics Tonight. He's a nice guy. We'll take a break. We'll get you some news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Later on, we'll talk to Bridget Carey from CNET. Also, and this should be especially entertaining, Sha Na Na member Jaco Marcellino will be joining us. You and I talked about Sha Na Na in glowing terms just a few short days ago. Now, one of the members of Sha Na Na will be joining us at 11:05, and you just found out that it is the member of Sha Na Na that you had a huge crush on.
Unbelievably.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember watching Sha Na Na, and I just remember Bowser, you know, with the...
At the beginning and end of every show, he would do that.
But I was talking to Bill before the show. I didn't remember what they were. Like, I didn't know that they weren't a band on their own, but they kind of just did remakes. Because I watched the show, too.
They did, like, it was a cover tribute to the 50s music. So, yeah, when you would see them perform somewhere... I don't think they had any original songs themselves. It was all just the big hits of the 50s.
Little Darlin'. They did everything. I mean, I loved that show.
They were great.
And then as I was looking at some old video of Jaco Marcellino. Ow.
You remembered he was the one you had a huge crush on.
Oh, yeah.
Are you going to share that with Jaco Marcellino?
Of course I will.
You got to tell him.
He needs a little loving right now. He's a little older right now. Still looks great.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they were really great, and that got me into 50s and 60s music as a little kid, 50s music mainly, and American Graffiti, I had the soundtrack to that. I loved all that music.
Now, they weren't in that, but they were in Grease, right?
I don't know. I never saw Grease.
What?
I know.
Wendy.
What is it with you and musicals?
No, I love musicals.
Julie Andrews is not in Grease.
No,
you're safe to see Grease.
I think I've seen it now, but I didn't see it when I was younger. West Side Story was my thing.
So you didn't want to cheat on West Side Story.
So you're a little grittier.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
A little more street.
True. Yes. I am.
Right.
Although there were moments in Grease where, you know, who was the guy?
John Travolta.
I mean, his character.
Danny Zuko.
Yeah. He was a little street.
Yeah. Oh, very much so.
Yeah, I don't...
And
they
very believable that they were high school kids, even though they were all 30.
Right,
I believed it.
That's a good point.
I totally believe it. Stockard Channing was, like, older than my mom when she was in Grease, and
she was great.
She could be in high school.
So there was that run where Travolta was playing high school kids through the decades, right?
Yes.
He did it in...
Yes. Welcome Back, Kotter.
Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah. He cornered the market. I'm playing troubled youths.
In now, different decades.
Yep. This is just a reason why you should join us on the stream, and we're on the stream from noon to one every day. Shut up, Steve.
We can hear that.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right.
Yeah, Bertrand has the Wintrust Business Lunch, which, you know, if you don't have the WGN app, you may want to listen to.
Member of Parliament on today, by the way, to talk Brexit.
Oh, all right.
But go ahead. What do you have?
The band? Pete Funk?
No.
So we were talking about Sha Na Na. I don't even know how it came up. And we were going through the history and the original members.
Right.
And they got wind of it. And Jaco wanted to be on with us and promote an event that he has
that's
coming
pretty
up.
Cool.
I know.
I'm surprised it played out that way. But yeah, that's excellent.
So we'll be, you know, it's always fun. And, you know, I'd like to give the phone number out for the stream in case you're not listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. 312-235-2525. Just jot that down. Put it in your contacts if you want. 312-235-2525. And that's how you reach us on the stream.
Yes.
Although the text number is the same. And we do chuckle occasionally because I like to call the stream Bill Leff Unleashed because sometimes we get a little out there. And Bertrand, you see the same texts that we do. Are you ever like scratching your head?
No, I don't look at them. to be honest with you.
It's okay. Always easy to decipher which texts are meant right. for you, Steve, and which are meant for Wendy and myself.
I used to watch them, and they're like, I'm like, wow, look at all these people texting my... That's not my show.
Sorry about that. I apologize. All right, so...
They played at Woodstock?
Yeah.
Okay, yes. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Wow.
Is that... Yes. Yeah.
Shana, wow. I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
All right, there are two other founding members that are still with Shana Na, Donnie York and Screamin' Scott Simon.
Simon, I remember him.
How do you remember this so well?
I remember because at the beginning of the TV show, they had a syndicated show that aired after Saturday Night Live, like an hour after Saturday Night Live for a couple of years, and they would show all 10 of them at the beginning. They each had their own... you know, 3 seconds of screen time while they put their name down and they did, you know, Bowser's pose was the iconic fists up in the air, but the other guys had to come up with something too. And none of them were as good as Bowser's, but they each had, during those opening credits, you saw all 10 of them.
Well, was that the only time the show was on? Wasn't it a primetime show too? Or
no, it was always late at night.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah.
Wow, I used to stay up late.
Yes.
Yeah, it was like the 50s genre of Don Kirshner's rock concert in a way.
That's it. But I have to say, the show was actually, I mean, aside from the music being really good, which you'd expect, it was really pretty funny. Whoever wrote it did a nice job.
They did skits and things like that. Yeah,
yeah.
And of course, the Sha-na-na name came from...
Sha-na-na-na-na.
But it is from a song.
Baby, It's You? Is that the name of the song?
No, that's not the song.
Oh.
Baby, It's You?
By the Silhouettes. 1957. Get a job. Sha-na-na-na. Get a job.
I did not know that. I'm embarrassed. Yeah, now that's easy. And the Shah of Iran was their lead singer for the first year.
I'm not talking.
And then he was forced out.
I don't understand.
Right up until then,
right. Steve. That's too bad.
So, yeah, we'll be talking to Jaco Marcelino at 11:05.
I'll ask him about the Shah of Iran, see what he says.
I can't wait. This will be the third time you've used that joke. Once on the stream, once on 7:20 a.m., and then with Jaco.
Right, yeah.
All right, quick break, then we'll come back. It's a Tech Tuesday, and we will talk to Bridget Carey about all things tech. Oh, yeah, it's Tech Tuesday. That's what it is. And Election Day. And we are going to be talking to Bridget Carey, CNET Senior Editor. You can find her at CNET.com. Bridget, Bill loves Legos. And were there Legos, Bill, when you were in school?
Oh, yeah, sure.
Legos. You got to play with them in school?
Yeah. They weren't as diverse as they are now. They didn't have licensing like they have now, but there was Legos.
Well, they've gotten even better, Bridget. Now you can make a Lego robot in school.
Yeah, Lego's been making a lot of different types of learned program varieties, some for high schoolers, some for really little kids. We're talking really basic stuff where you can make a robot or a guitar and have sound effects. But the new thing that just came out today was something called Spike Prime, and they're only targeting middle school students with this one. And parents, I don't know if you can buy one because it looks like it's just being targeted to schools. But the whole thing is that they make these curriculums where the student goes to the class and they have these like 30 to 40 minute projects they can do to problem solve, make little robots, learn to program with a scratch coding language. So it's trying to make it easy for teachers who just want an easy lesson. They don't have to feel like, wow, I have to now make a lesson around Legos. No. They kind of spell it all out for the teacher. Here you go. And they're trying to sell them in schools in these packages like this. And what's interesting to me as someone who kind of watches this space is I've seen several types of these educational toys pivoting to target schools and not so much target the consumer. I can make assumptions as to why, like maybe there's less shelf space without a Toys R Us in town, or maybe they just see a big potential because you have all this talk about how do we get, you know, middle school kids more into programming so when they grow up into the next generation, It's not a field that will, you know, be lacking candidates, and also will encourage girls to stick with these fields and not go into something else in high school.
Can I tell you something? If I could build a robot when I went to school, I would be such a tech wizard right now, because that to me would be fun. It's not your typical reading, writing, and arithmetic, and you are learning something that is going to really help you in this day and age.
It kind of blends not just the science and tech and math, but you got that art side as well. So the creative side gets tapped too, which is what I like in a lot of these types of things you're seeing come out now.
So it's possible this is goodwill, Bridget, but also couldn't LEGO keep tabs on these kids, keep an eye open for kids that have a certain proclivity to this, and maybe scout them along the way to either work for them or other high-tech companies?
Oh, yeah, you're in the mindset of a lot of things now. Actually, there's this other company called Little Bits. They make a lot of fun little programmable circuits. There's an R2-D2, an Avengers thing, but they have these programs in schools, and Disney just partnered to get more girls involved, and I'm sure part of that contest to get involved and has to be sponsored by Disney has something to do, because it's in California right now, has something to do maybe with like recruiting those students as they get older to work for these companies. Exactly right.
And, you know, putting these LEGO Spike Prime in schools, I kind of was irritated with the school because the kids had Mac computers to work on. Yeah. So then all the kids came home and said, yeah, I want a Mac computer. So you got to be careful of that.
Oh, yeah. In school, they had Macs for me, but now a lot of schools have Chromebooks, and yeah, it always influences what your kids want you to buy.
That's absolutely true. All right, what's going on? Speaking of robots, Sony has a robot dog, and there are some problems.
Well, it's not really so much problems, but you've heard me talk about the Aibo robot dog before that Sony makes. It's that $3,000 little robot dog, and it's not for sale or for use in Illinois. And so we've been doing this thing on CNET where we have a lot of stories about facial recognition technology, and the story up right now is about, like, a little more in depth as to why it's not being able to be used in Illinois and kind of the reasons behind that. And it goes beyond just the dog, obviously. There's a law from 2018 that really regulates what is being used in biometric identifiers and other, you know, ways to read a face. And the long short of it is the law says you should be able to have consent if your face is being used in any sort of biometric data. And when it comes to the dog, well, it's looking at your face and it's not asking you, hey, could you please sign this waiver? You know, it's just doing it. Well, now, a lot of companies have these types of technologies worked in it when it comes to, like, doorbell cameras, like Nest.
Yeah.
But they just disabled the feature for Illinois. You're actually seeing a weird normalization right now in biometrics, because that facial recognition, it's being sold as a, hey, wouldn't it be great to know if your Aunt Judy came to the door or your dog Walker and we just learned their face. But the side of it that's concerning is you start to see a normalization of it. There's this feeling that it's fine to like take these biometrics without permission or consent. And we need to question, all right, what is being done to regulate that data on the corporation side? Because if you're going to an airport, it's convenient. If you're going to the doorbell, yeah, I want to know when the babysitter's here because I recognize their face. But, you know, will there be more discussion around regulation and what's being done with all that data?
I don't know if I'm shocked, surprised, or proud that Illinois has this big moral compass now,
right,
all of a sudden. Wow, we look good once.
Yeah, it doesn't happen often, so let's cherish this.
There are some states that are getting, like, they're talking about it more, but you guys definitely are doing the most right now.
And happy birthday to Gmail. How old is Gmail, and what changes can we look for?
15 years old.
Wow.
And it actually launched on April 1st back in 2004. So people thought it was a joke because Google only did search back then. But the big shocking part of Gmail was that you got 1 gigabyte of storage. It was like 100 times more than anyone else offered, because I was still on AOL
we all
back
were.
Then. But Yeah, but there's a new feature out now. It lets you schedule when you want an email to be sent out. So if you're someone who is up late at night trying to get work done and you're sending emails out at midnight looking like the weirdo who doesn't sleep, you can at least schedule it to appear in their inbox the next morning and not stress people out at with your 2 a.m. emails.
I have never in my life worried about that. I didn't. If I think of something at midnight, I've emailed you. Yeah. You're up late.
I'm up very late, and anytime I send an email to anybody, it always comes back, wow, 2:11, what's going on? Why are you still up? So this would be a good thing for me.
Yeah. Although the younger...
I think it's good for bosses to not stress out their underlings.
Oh, maybe.
And for, I have teenage sons who would use this because a lot of times I'll say, oh, just email your teacher. And he's like, it's, you know, 2 a.m. on a Saturday night. I can't do it. Right. I'm like, why not?
Yeah.
But that might
be... Problem solved.
Because it's a courtesy thing now because we all have the problem of being on our phones too much. Maybe we're doing the other person a service by not bombarding them with something to think about to keep them up longer, you know?
Yeah.
So that's another way to think of it.
True. Yeah.
I never thought of that. I'm like, just email and get it over with. They can look at it in the morning. But good to know. Bridget, thank you so much. You can find her at CNET.com and social media on Twitter at Bridget Carey and Instagram at Bridget Happens. Happy Tech Tuesday.
Great. Talk to you later, guys.
Thanks, Bridget. Coming up, the stories that matter with Steve Bertrand from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.
And it's from a Merrill Crawford who's 9 years old and he lives in San Diego, California. He writes, Dear Shanana, in your last show, one of you said the word use. Well, I asked one of my teachers about this, and she said, there's no such word as use, and that you guys should be ashamed of yourselves for setting a bad example for all us kids. And then she made me stand in the corner for watching your dumb show in the first place. Well, maybe so, Merrill, but in the meantime, we're big stars, and you're a 9-year-old punk who's got nothing better to do than write snotty letters to big TV stars. So who's right, us or you?
How about that? Does that bring back memories, Jocko?
Yous are right.
Jocko Marcelino, a member of Sha Na Na, celebrating their 50th anniversary. They are the ultimate 50s tribute band. How are you, Jocko? Great to talk to you.
I'm good, and I appreciate that you guys could pronounce my last name correctly.
Marcelino.
Very impressive. Yeah, it's very impressive. Thank you.
All right. We were talking about you a couple of days ago and earlier today, in fact, and Bill and I are a little on the other side of 50, and we watched the Sha Na Na show, but now someone has texted and said that originally it came on when? Because I think we're at the wrong age.
Well, we did the pilot in 1975, it ran in syndication, and it ran all different times all around the country, so it wasn't particularly one slot, so, you know, it was great. It actually went worldwide about 8 years.
It was so good.
You know, you couldn't ask for, yeah, well, you know, we've been very fortunate over, you know, 5 decades. We didn't have to depend on record sales, though we sold well and have some gold and platinum, but we got involved in some huge media projects. You know, our 8th gig was Woodstock, and then later we had a TV show, and, you know, we're sort of waiting, and then the TV show brought us, you know, every night. It was like having a hit record. And then in the middle of that, they recruited us to play Johnny Casino and the Gamblers in the movie Grease, and we had more songs on that soundtrack than any other artist, so it's been, you know, we're very fortunate, and I can't believe it. I'm still doing it.
Well, you must be good at it then. Do me a favor, Jocko. Go back to that, something you just mentioned about Woodstock. It was your 8th job as the band, Sha Na Na. Their 8th job was Woodstock. How did that happen? Because the odds of that are very, very slim.
Well, we were at Columbia, and it was sort of a spinoff of a glee club. And then they started doing the oldies, and they brought me in. I was drums, and we went and bought, you know, leather jackets and rented Golda Meir outfits. And we really, it really was something on campus. You know, we did a show, our first show, and invited everybody, sort of a night off from the revolution at Columbia. And it was so well received, we only knew a half hour of songs. We just did them again. And I knew there was something brewing, you know. And so we did that. We had 12 guys at the time, and we, you know, did some local things, went down to Yale, and then we were about to pack it in, but we went down to the Steve Paul scene, which was in Hell's Kitchen, which was where the rock stars hung. Mm-hmm. And we played for about, until like local mobsters leaned on the thing. The very last night, the producers of Woodstock were at this place before they shut it down, and we got hired on the spot. We got paid $350, and the check bounced.
Oh,
but
no.
The person most responsible for our career in many ways is Jimi Hendrix, because Jimi came down three or four nights, and he brought those producers down. So it was, you know, wild. I'm not like a 19-year-old kid, and here we got Hendrix and Joplin and Led Zeppelin. But Jimi got us that gig, and as it was unbelievable. We spent the whole weekend out there at Woodstock, and then we were thinking, oh, we're not getting on, because we kept getting pushed back. But Jimi demanded in his management that the acts who were hanging out got to go on. They wanted him to go on Sunday night and stop the event, because the stage was sinking. You know, they were having electrical problems, you know. But Jimi said, no, my deal is I close the show. And so he saved our slot. So we're very indebted to the great and unbelievable Jimi Hendrix.
And you guys didn't really know him well, right? He just came to see you, but you guys weren't friends with him, right?
Well, no, but, you know, we became friendly, and then we did shows. We were in festivals together.
Yeah.
But, no, Jimi was, you know, before he was Jimi Hendrix, he was an R&B phenomenon. He was playing with the Isley Brothers, you know, Twist and Shout Isleys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so he was really obviously a student of all sorts of rock and roll and rhythm and blues.
Did you make history at Woodstock for being the youngest person to perform? You were how old?
Well, I was the second youngest. But the first youngest was Henry Gross, our guitarist. So the two of us battled for the youngest, but Henry was it.
And you were 19 when you played Woodstock?
I was 19 when I played Woodstock.
Was
yeah, it was really.
I'm so jealous.
We've seen it on film. You were there. Was it as crazy being there as it seemed when you see documentary footage of it?
Well, you know, it was the best of times and the worst of times, you know. You really had to take care of your neighbor, because the artist backstage immediately became a medical station. And I remember I was probably taking some sort of mild hallucinogenic. But then I decided I wanted to be alone. But, of course, there was only 500,000 people there with me. It was not the ideal place for a claustrophobe.
Right.
But it was cool. The music got me in a good groove. But, you know, that's... It really was. It could have been Altamont, you know.
Yeah.
It could have been Sympathy for the Devil if you take those two films and re-edit them.
Yeah.
But it was an extraordinary thing, and we got a sense as we spent the weekend out there how big it was going to be. And somebody had the New York Times Sunday morning paper, and it was a big area, that big aerial shot of Woodstock, and I knew, oh, This is a legendary concert, which will never be repeated again.
Although the attempt to repeat it, 50th anniversary, you guys will be performing June 1st at the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts, and then you guys have a new LP and CD, the 50th anniversary set coming out.
Yeah, we're doing they're doing a smart thing up at Bethel Woods, because there, you know, there's another site that the producers have up in Watkins Glen Racetrack, but they're sort of doing a Coachella Woodstock, which is cool, And we're playing actually at the site of Bethel Woods, right there where it all happened, the sacred ground of rock and roll in Woodstock.
And I'm loving that this is being issued on LP, because vinyl has made such a huge comeback. It was popular when you guys were around, and now it's come back again.
Yeah, and we're excited. We've collected 12 live cuts from over the years. And then the current Sean and I partner guys each picked one of their studio songs. So it's a nice collection, and we're excited that it's coming. And we're excited to be going back to Woodstock, the original site.
Isn't it amazing? 50 years. Isn't that just throwing you? It doesn't seem like 50 years ago, does it?
Not at all. You know, people tell me, what was the best show you did? And I get, never did. There were obvious ones, you know, Madison Square Garden, Woodstock. But I say it was last Saturday night. We rocked them, you know, whatever it was. Because, you know, this music is so loved by everybody.
Sure.
And so well known. And, you know, you hear it in movies and TVs and the oldies formats. But, you know, we have fun. We do shtick. But, you know, we really go out of our way to recreate it accurately as we can.
Oh, that's excellent. That's excellent. Jocko, can you hold on? Are you okay for time?
Sure.
All right. Jocko Marcellino is our guest, Shanana founder and current member. We'll continue this conversation in just a little bit.
Covered in goosebumps, Bill, I gotta tell you.
Yep. Shanana is 50. Jocko Marcellino, one of the founding members of Shanana, joins us right now. Jocko, remind me, Wendy and I started to talk about this on the air the other day, and I don't remember the specifics, but for a while there was a guy touring around pretending he was a member of Shanana when in fact he had never been with the band. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah. We did a thing on CBS about that. Yeah, that guy, he was a bad dude, and I think he's passed away.
Oh, but he fooled a lot of people for a long time.
Yeah, he was down in the Florida area.
Yeah,
there's a lot of doo-wop down there in Florida. So he would plug himself into somebody's lineup, and until we found out, and then we had to go. You know, of course he threatened us or something, if I recall. But
he threatened you.
It was all. Yeah.
It was.
It's all over now. Let's put it that way.
All right. Good.
Or Stones would say.
Yes, absolutely. And let's hope that Mick Jagger, his heart surgery goes well. I kind of halfway thought that was leading up to an April Fool's Day joke that they had to cancel or postpone some of their shows because of Mick's heart issues. But we wish him luck.
No, it's good. Yeah, of course. The great Mick Jagger.
Although I got. Go ahead, Jocko.
Now, there's another rumor that about Woodstock that Paul McCartney was going to join Ringo and do a Beatles and Monkees reunion. Of course, it turned out to be total April Fool's baloney.
Yeah, God. A lot of Zeppelin stuff was going around yesterday. Jocko, we were watching old clips, of course, when you read that letter, and I forgot how much of a crush I had on you. I still do.
Uh-oh.
Oh, it's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And I will say, thanks to Bowser, I rolled up my, I didn't even smoke at the time, but I put cigarettes in my white t-shirt and rolled up my sleeve. I mean, you got younger kids to love 50s music, you guys.
Yeah, I hope they didn't get it to love cigarettes.
No,
but yeah,
definitely not.
To love the music. Well, that was the thing, and it's been extraordinary to go to a show and see three, even four generations of a family singing along, mouthing the words, you know, and wearing the outfits. And, you know, it always comes around, the style, the music, the fashion, the cars. It's, you know, Americana, and we're glad that we sort of were the neoclassicist, big word, big Columbia word.
That's a good one.
of rock and roll, and so many careers came back, and so much great doo-wop and rhythm and blues is being played today.
I have to say, in addition to the music always being entertaining, Jocko, the TV show was genuinely funny. You guys really did a great job on the TV show.
Yeah, it was sort of vaudeville. It was slapstick a little bit and wrapped around all this good music. And, you know, it was unbelievable to do. We'd shoot a show and a half per tape day. It was one of the fastest shows ever recorded. And, you know, and it had a great ride.
Can I tell you a moment I'll never forget? You had a guy in Sha-na-na, I want to say his name was Johnny, but I could be wrong, who looked a lot like Billy Crystal. And then in one episode,
yeah,
Billy Crystal was on, and they stood next to each other, and you couldn't tell who was who.
Yeah, no, that was always a shtick. And we did a lot of shows with Billy. You know, he would open up to us. Yeah, it was great. My favorite moment, you know, there were a lot of them, but was Ethel Merman.
Oh, my God.
She was a guest host, right?
Yeah, she was a guest, and so she's standing in front of this lush, sort of purplish curtain, right? And she says, "Curtains off!" The curtain flies up, and we're all standing there posing, and she turns around, looks at us, and turns back to the camera and says, "Curtains down!"
James Brown was on the show, the Ramones, Isaac Hayes, Phyllis Diller. I loved Phyllis Diller.
Yeah, the Ramones was fun. James Brown was specifically and really great for me because it was sort of a milestone in my drumming. James had not heard the track. We cut it the day before, and I had the band sing the background to get it to be more soulful. And we cut Too Funky in here. So literally we're in front of a live audience, and James is going to sing it, you know. And he hadn't heard the track. So we're all sitting at the edge of the stage, and James is listening and nodding his head. And then he looked up, and he said, "Who's the drummer?" And I went, "Oh, man, wow." And I go, I am Mr. Brown. And so he puts his hand out, palm up. He said, "Brother," and he gave me five.
Oh.
The godfather of soul.
Yeah.
Gave me five, so, you know.
Well, there's an old adage in show business, Jocko, that if you can work with James Brown and Ethel Merman, you're doing something right.
That's right. It was very eclectic.
Yes, it sounds like it was
a ton of fun, and obviously why I still do this. We're out here rocking. I got seven great vocalists, and we have self-contained, two drummers, guitars, you know, we sax. And we've been able to, as people move on, you know, recruit some very fine players, and mostly with great hair, because that's very important.
Oh, yeah, totally.
Good hair. And I can still do a pompadour.
Still to this day, yeah.
It's a little gray, okay, I admit.
It's all about the volume, not the color.
Yeah, that's it. Well, I used to, you know, I said, I'm never going to dye it. Never mind. I'm going to be a... Oh, you know, you call it silver now, right?
Yeah,
it sounds better.
Yeah, that's what you do.
Well, we need to mention that the group will be performing June 1st at the Bethel Woods Center for the Arts. That's a 7 o'clock start. If you haven't seen Sha-na-na, what are you waiting for? 50 years of service to the music industry. What an honor to talk to you, Jocko. Wendy and I are huge fans, and I know that so many people listening would say the same. So keep it going.
We're coming to your neighborhood in late June. Addison, Illinois, at the Village Green. Sha-na-na will be in Addison on June 20th.
June 20th. I'm writing it down.
I'm writing that down, too. We got to go.
All right.
Sha-na-na.com is the best place to send people for more info.
Sha-na-na.com, and then they're going to be posting the sale of the 50th anniversary vinyl and LP.
Love it. So nice to talk to you. I still have a crush on you,
okay,
Jocko.
Oh, thanks so much. I'm honored.
You did the best Ethel Merman impression of anyone we've ever had on the show.
And now Bill has a crush on
you. Now I have a crush on you. Thank you, Jocko.
Okay, guys.
Grease for peace.
Thank you.
All right.
All right.
That's how they used to end the show. Bowser would always go, "Grease for peace," and then he would do the arm thing.
Yeah. He should try that.
I'm going to start saying that when I leave somewhere now.
We should see
Grandma
if we can get him up in the studio when he's town for Addison.
That'd be fun.
You still got it? Oh, he hung up.
Yeah.
I would love to see him up in here in person.
That would
get up all in here.
Sure.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
A break and then some news and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Thanks, David. It's Bill Luff. It's Wendy Snyder. We'll be here with you for the next 22 minutes or so. And then we head toward the stream, and we would love for you to join us. It's a lot of fun on the stream. There's no rules, Wendy, on the stream. Anything goes on the stream.
That's true.
Anything. Anything. At the beginning of the show today, I was saying that yesterday we had on a man named Mark Toland, and Mark is a mentalist. He is able to read people's minds, and he's the first to tell you that he doesn't really have the ability to read people's minds. It's something of a magic trick, right? But he did a trick for us where he gave you a piece of paper and me a piece of paper. He told you to write down a name. He told me to write down a city, and we did. And then he was going to guess the name that you wrote down and the city that I wrote down. And he guessed yours, and you were amazed. Is there a word that means amazed times a thousand? Because you were that. You were amazed times a thousand.
I was just astounded.
You were astounded.
That yes. was it.
Now, he couldn't exactly come up with the city that I wrote down.
Because you sabotaged him.
Well, I knew what the trick was, so I did it slightly different, you know. But then he had a backup plan, and he did that. He executed that perfectly. But then you said your problem is, to me, that you're not a believer, which is true.
You can't suspend belief. Seriously, even like when you watch a movie, you are like, well, that couldn't possibly happen. It's hard for you
to escape.
Right.
Right. Like,
it is. And
right.
I was going to say it's hard for you to not think, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
My brain is constantly going with stupid stuff.
Yeah.
So I need the escape where I can turn off my brain yeah. and just absorb what I'm watching. You do not. You always have that.
I'm more analytical, yes. trying to figure out what's behind the yes. scenes. Right. All right. So here's the time where I mean, there have been other times where magicians or people who are magician-like have fooled me, but I'll tell you the one that I still don't understand.
All right.
I don't get this at all. Back when I was doing stand-up, they were coming up with a cable channel called AT. I don't know if you remember it. It didn't last too long. It was Roger Ailes, who's been in the news on the negative side, started
up this
network.
Did you wear something sexy for him?
I sure did. You know me.
Yes,
what do you think?
I
always dress sexy. So Roger Ailes had this network called the AT Network, and AT stood for America's Talking.
Oh,
and what it was a 24-hour channel of all talk shows. It only lasted a year and a half. It did not last long. But when they were first starting the network out, they hired me because they wanted me to go to different cities around the United States and look for people. They had this huge contest looking for America's next talk show host. So I hosted this thing in a bunch of cities where we went for, you know, we would go to a city for a couple of days, and all these people would audition and make a tape, and then they would pick a winner for the contest, and they would get their own talk show.
Wow.
Pretty good idea, right? All right. So we're in one of the cities, and the talk shows ran the gamut. Sometimes they were just, you know, like today's podcasts do. They were about, you know, you pick a specific topic, and that's what their five-minute talk show was, right? So we were in one of the cities, and this woman, I would meet with the people, the potential hosts, for a couple minutes, and I would say, what is the show about, and what do you want in your introduction?
Perfect.
And then I would provide that, right?
You're like a professional.
Well, kind of.
They should have given you a talk
show. Now, who needs that? So I meet with this lady, and this lady is about 50, and she's very mysterious looking, you know, by design.
Okay.
She wanted to look mysterious, and she was pulling it off really well. So I introduced myself, and she didn't say anything. She just kind of observed me, and she would just kind of, like, I would talk. I said who I was, and she would just take a step back and absorb it all. And this went on for a minute or two. And she said, my show is going to be about mind reading. And she told me what her name was. And I said, okay, do you want anything special? And she goes, no. Just let them know who I am and what I do. And I go, okay, that's not a problem. So she starts out, and she's not doing very well. She's explaining the art of reading people's minds, and it's not going very well. And a kid stands up in the audience, like a high school or a college kid. He's about 17 years old. And he goes, you're a mind reader? And she goes, I am a mind reader. And he goes, I'm holding up a hand behind my back. How many fingers am I holding up? And he was flipping her off. He had one finger up behind. And she said, that's a parlor trick. I don't do that. I'm a mind reader. And he goes, ah, you're not doing it because you can't do it. And she goes, you're holding up one finger. It's your middle finger. You're flipping me off. And the crowd all goes, ooh, like that. And she goes, and your name is Steven, and you come from, and she said, the city he's from. And she just went on this litany of things about him. And he's like, oh, wow, you're really good. And he sits down. So the crowd is amazed by this. But I know the kid's a plant.
I was just going to say.
He's obviously a plant, right? Because nobody has that ability. So when it's all said and done, she goes, and she does really well because of that. Because after that happened, everybody loved this woman. Yeah. They couldn't believe that a wizard had come to their community and wanted to, their own talk show.
Plus, they felt bad for her because this bratty little kid was up.
Right.
Yeah.
So she comes over to me when it was all done, and she goes, how do you think I did? And I go, you did really well. She goes, but you're not a believer. I go, it's not my job to be a believer or not. It's my job to introduce you. And you know, you did really well. The crowd loved you. And she goes, but you don't think I did well. I go, no, you did great. Everybody, they were applauding. They wanted more. That's fantastic. She goes, what'd you think of the kid who heckled me? I go, well, and she goes, what? And I go, he was a plant. And she smiled and she goes, you're very wise, aren't you? I go, oh, you know, I've been doing
I've been
things
around
like
the block.
This. I've been around the block. This isn't my first rodeo, I said. So she said, so I shouldn't have done that? I go, no, I think you did the right thing, right? So she goes, why are you so skeptical? I go, I'm not skeptical. I know it's a game. It's a show. I get that. And the end result is you did well. People will remember you, and that's good. So she puts her hand on my shoulder, and she goes, thank you. You've been very kind to me. And I go, oh, thank you. She starts to walk away, and she turns around, and she says, your grandmother Mary watches over you and wishes you were more of a believer. And then she walks away. I do have a grandmother named Mary, who is no longer with us and wasn't at the time. And just the way she said it was so scary and chilling that I just stood there and just waving goodbye as she walks off. I'm like, wow, how'd you do that?
And you didn't follow her? That would have been, oh my God, that would have been like, wait, can I buy you coffee?
Right.
Tell me more.
I need to know more. So a friend of mine who I explained this to said, well, she probably guessed by your age that if your grandmother wasn't alive anymore, her name would be Mary, because that was the most common name at the time.
That is a pretty common name.
It is
name
a common
not
name.
Not like, you know, Gertrude or...
But she said it with, like, so much authority, like, I know I've got this one. And now keep in mind, this is the days before the internet where you could look stuff like this up if you really wanted to.
I think it was a coincidence and she just hit. On you.
I do too. Not hit on me. She threw that idea at me.
Well, she hit on the name. Because
right.
It was a common name at the time. Good chance you had a grandparent who was not
right.
with you.
I believe that's the case. But the way she said it, like, there's no doubt about it. You've got somebody in your life, a grandparent named Mary. And they're just the way she said it with so much power and then just off into the sunset.
Now, did you know Grandma Mary?
No, she died before I was born.
Did you go home and ask your mom if maybe she believed in the
I told my mom that, and my mom got all teary-eyed. My mom was like, oh.
But Grandma Mary said you should start believing. Was she a believer in different things?
I don't know that.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that. It's possible. But that's pretty eerie, right? Like
one doesn't freak me out because I feel like
that's the only one. The other ones, I always go, well, it's a part. It's some sort of a trick. They're tricking me, but I don't know how she pulled that off. That was good.
See, when it involves you, you have
well,
that wide-eyed wonder that I had.
Because normally if I don't know exactly how it was done, like with Mark yesterday, I told you exactly how it was done, and we've had other magicians or mentalists on, and when they leave,
you ruin things.
You know, do you want to know how it's done? And you always say yes.
Yeah, I know.
Please tell me how it was done, and then I tell you, and you go, of course, that of course. Now it makes sense. But with that lady, with the lady with the gray, I can't figure out how she pulled that off.
I bet if you took 10 random calls, there would be
in
just
our
random,
age bracket.
Yes, there'd be. Five that had a Grandma Mary.
Yeah. I know.
Wow, you believe.
More than likely, I don't believe.
Did she get the show?
No, she did not get the show. She did not get the show.
Didn't you have any pull?
No. Me?
Didn't Grandma Mary?
No. No. Strangely, she did not. That's the sad part of the story. So that's kind of
creepy.
That's kind of creepy. That's kind of creepy.
Well, you know I believe in everything.
I know.
So I don't find that to be shocking.
Yeah.
I find it shocking that you believed it.
It's not that I believed it. It's that it froze me. You know, I just like, oh, how'd she do that? I don't know how she did it. Crazy. All right, we'll take a break, and then there's more show. Do you know how she did it? Call me and tell me. I'm at 312-981-7200 if you know how she did it.
Or if you're the person right. you can that you know that made an impact
the
on
lady
Bill
who
Love.
Did that to me.
Bill, somebody wants to talk about mind reading.
Please.
Rita went to see our person.
Oh, Mark Tolan
yes.
from yesterday's show? Yeah? Rita, what'd you think?
I think it's amazing. This guy knew everything. I went with a good friend of mine, and I know she did not speak with him before the thing.
Yes.
And all he did was have a group of people write down their first names, well, actually both names, first and last, and what sign they were born under, and then they ask a question. And he picked her card out. He knew what her question was. Her grandson is getting married, and she was concerned about if this girl was right for wow. him. But anyhow, he named each one of her children. He said, he just kind of looks funny at you.
Yeah.
And he said, you have two sons, and one's name has lots of G's in it. Well, she has a son named Greg with two G's at the end.
Yeah.
Then he said, you have another son named Scott. And then there's a daughter, and her name begins with K. And then he, like, kind of hit a think. And he said, that's Kim.
How does
and
he do that?
Was I don't know.
Was he
I've
on the Google?
I've seen this guy before.
was he on the Google?
Bill doesn't believe.
He has a-
so and now this guy did say, he explained that it is a trick. He's basically
yeah.
lying to you, but it's amazing.
No.
He wasn't lying.
No, he claims it isn't a trick. He said he has this gift.
Well, I
and
think
I
you
know
saw a different
because
person.
I had-
it was Mark Tolan, the guy from yesterday's show.
No, his name was Jim Elders.
Oh, it's a different guy.
E-L-D-E-R-S.
This guy has a gift, Wendy. Mark Tolan says he does not have a gift.
He comes right out and says,
no,
right.
seriously.
No, I believe
I've
in this
stuff.
I've
seen him before, and yeah. I had written down something, and he knew my birthday.
That's
I mean, it was just amazing.
It mystifies us.
I
don't know.
I believe.
All right.
And you have to believe to receive.
Yes.
Thank you very much for your call, Rita. We appreciate it.
I
do believe
that rule
in that
only
stuff.
Applies to Santa Claus.
I'm sorry.
That's the Santa Claus rule.
I got confused.
Yeah. Yeah. No, Mark said yesterday, flat
yeah,
out,
yeah,
he goes,
yeah, yeah.
I don't have any sort of gift. And the thing I like most about Mark is he's upset that other mentalists or spiritualists sometimes take advantage. They, you know, they play off, like if you've lost a loved one, they'll pretend that they're talking to that person. And he goes, that's not fair. Don't do that.
Like the faith healers, my dad died. He was a childhood diabetic. I don't know which diabetes type that is, but he was losing his vision and he had some health issues and died at 46. So he, you know, sometimes you turn to different outlets to try and help you if you know
sure.
your health isn't good. And he would watch Catherine Coleman, and there was some other faith healer, and he wanted to believe so badly, but there's just no way someone can lay their hands on you.
Right.
And that's what really irritates me about those people.
Yeah.
It was some movie. I don't know if it was a Jim Carrey. It was a Jim Carrey movie.
The one where he's Andy Kaufman.
Yeah.
Man on the Moon.
Yeah, where, you know, Andy Kaufman believed too and then was just completely devastated to find out that
they're all parlor tricks.
And you, I mean, to prey on people that are that desperate
yeah.
is like, that's a direct beeline to hell.
Because we mentioned with Mark yesterday, a lot of times people will say, well, if you have this ability, why don't you just go win the lottery every day
yeah.
and be a billionaire? Well, that's not how it works. But it should work. If you have
I
the
know.
Ability to tell the future or talk to spirits, shouldn't you be able to win the lottery if you wanted to?
Yeah.
It's crazy. Coming up, the stories that matter with David Jennings from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom right here on WGN Radio.